So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Cathy Brown, who is Executive Director of Engage for Success. Hi, Cathy. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Adrian. How are you?
I'm splendid. So, Executive Director of Engage for Success. Apart, you know, first of all, Executive Director, that's like the all-powerful, almighty sort of position, I guess.
Well, I like to formally call myself the goddess of everything, because what it actually means is in a tiny organization I do everything.
Very good. So I mean, so to tell us a little bit about not kind of the executive director title, because I'm pretty sure that kind of that's something that is either been given to you, you've made it up, and it probably changes on a week by week basis, or possibly on a day by day basis. But tell us about Engage for Success and kind of you know, and about you and how you came to it and what sort of work that Engage for Success does.
Yeah. So Engage for Success was formed pretty much 5 years ago on the back of a government report. So the Labour government at the time asked David McLeod and Nita Clark to investigate employee engagement to decide whether or not it was actually a real and tangible thing. Was there evidence for it? And assuming that there was evidence for it, what should organisations know about it? What should they be doing about it?
Right.
So David and Nita went off and spent a goodly long time writing that report. They interviewed, in the end, organisations covering about a million employees. It was a huge undertaking. And they brought in organisations from the public sector, from the private sector, big ones, small ones. So there was a real spread across the economy. And they produced that report in about 2009. And it, as these things do, it fell into the black hole of the changing government. Luckily for us, it was pulled out again by the coalition government, because the topic itself has always had really broad cross-party support. And it was resurrected, and they were asked to come into Downing Street and let the government know what it is they wanted to do about the topic, because they'd concluded in that report was, absolutely, engagement is a real and tangible thing, that there is clear evidence that it is beneficial for the organisations that manage to create a really engaging culture, that it's beneficial for the employees that are working in that culture, certainly in terms of their health and well-being, and that obviously that has a knock-on impact on the economies and the societies in which we live and in which we work. So their primary conclusion was, everybody kind of gets that it's a good thing. Nobody really quite knows what to do. And that was sort of their premise. And so, they potted off to Downing Street and were given a magic wand to say, go away and do whatever it is that you want to do to make sure that people do know what to do about engagement. And David and Nita did not want to set up a sort of government committee. They didn't want to run a commercial organisation. They didn't want to run a marketing campaign. And what they did, and what Engage for Success is they set up a social movement. So we're funded by and run by industry. We don't receive government money, so we're not a government organisation in that sense, but we receive considerable amount of support in the sense of their power to convene and that type of thing, and the interest that we still receive at a government level. And the whole point, really, of the movement was to provide a place where anybody with an interest in engagement, at whatever point they were coming at it from, if they were coming at it organisationally, if they were coming at it individually, if they were a leader, if they were a manager, if they were in HR, if they were comms, if they've got engagement in their title or not, so that all of these people could meet like-minded people to talk about the challenges that they all experience, to really push and drive thought leadership in this area, and to share all of the great practice that's already out there in terms of good management, good leadership, good working practices, engaging cultures, because these things are not new. But there's a whole point there about sharing them and making them really accessible to people and connecting people together so that they can get the help that they need at whatever level they're at within their organisation. So that's what the organisation itself does. We are a completely, apart from myself, a volunteer and secondee organisation. So we receive a huge amount of support from the organisations that get involved with us. And I myself myself, my original connection was when I was working for BT, British Telecom, engagement very high up on their agenda. And they'd been involved in the original report, and we received a secondee request into our talent pool from David and Anita at the very start. And I was hugely lucky to be seconded by BT for 2 years to help set up Engage for Success initially, which was an amazing professional experience for me. And that's what a number of our people do. So they're seconded in from organisations for periods of anything from 6 months to a couple of years. Can be full-time, can be part-time. And we have a vast amount of volunteers that work on our thought and action groups where we're doing research or we're doing very practically based supporting people with case studies that we can then spread through the website, all of that type of thing.
Okay.
So and I sit there and I have my fingers in all the pies and go out and fly the flag for engagement and Engage for Success a lot, which is where you and I met, obviously.
Yes.
And generally keep all the wheels turning.
Very good. Now, so like you just alluded to, we met at a recent employee engagement sort of summit where we had a bit of a mutual and sort of like-minded rant at each other.
We did.
But first of all, I mean, I think that, you know, here's the thing. I mean, engagement's been on the agenda for some time. Yeah. It's a kind of funny old word. It's kind of whether you put kind of, I don't know, customer in front of it or employee in front of it. Engagement is, you know, what does it mean? And yeah, all these different things. But if we just like take employee engagement, I mean, first of all, the data isn't great in terms of kind of what engagement is. But I mean, I think one of the first things we need to kind of better understand is like, what is an engaged employee? Because I mean, it seems to me it's kind of hard. I mean, this is almost my problem with it. It's kind of hard to land on a definition which is definitive.
Yes.
And I guess there's a lesson in that in of itself, is there not?
There is, absolutely. And I mean, we're in the very lucky position, I think, as Engage for Success, in that we are almost an umbrella organisation, if you like, and we therefore do not need to define engagement,
right.
And we've chosen not to.
Right.
So we would say that we accept, when David and Anita were writing the original report, for instance, I think they stopped counting at about 54 different definitions of engagement.
Yeah.
So we can say we accept all of your definitions. Mm-hmm. Broadly speaking, there are some similar characteristics around words like organisational commitment, around health and well-being of the employees, that type of thing. But it only really becomes important to define it, and I think you define it within your organizational context if you want to try and measure it. Mm-hmm. And at that point, obviously, you need to define what it is that you are measuring. But engagement can be a hugely individual thing, because essentially we are talking about how people feel.
Yes.
Which is subjective.
Yeah,
rather
yeah.
than objective. And obviously within one particular organizational culture, depending on your cultural fit and your personality, mm-hmm. you might find that more or less engaging, depending on what you are like. But what I generally tend to say to people is, of course, yeah, as people, we don't actually wake up in the morning and go, ah, do you know what? I feel really engaged today. We wake up and we think, ah, do you know, I'm really looking forward to being in work today. We're getting some great stuff done and I really enjoy my job and I enjoy my colleagues. Or if we're not so happy at what we do, we say, oh, do you know what? I want to stay in bed for another half an hour. And actually, I feel really a bit ropey about going into work because I'm not enjoying it and my manager's a bit of a bully, and that's disengagement, and it means that we don't really care about the organisation that we're working for or the product or service that we're selling or even potentially about our relationships with our colleagues.
But does that not does that also then not mean that, so if we don't, I mean, and I agree with this, we don't wake up and go, oh, I feel engaged, it's a product of what we do.
Yes.
It's an outcome.
It is.
And therefore, if it's an outcome, does that mean that there's actually kind of not much kind of point focusing on it because it's an outcome?
I think it can be counterproductive. One of the things that we talk about sometimes is transactional levels of engagement.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of companies do actually fall into this bracket. There's some research by the CIPD that suggests that about 75% of organisations are in this transactional engagement bracket.
Right.
And it tends to be where their focus on engagement is based around use of a survey and the output of that survey. And sort of dealing with that in action plans and that type of thing.
Is that not almost kind of go back to kind of like, I don't know, like Hertzberg's kind of like, you know, hygiene and motivation kind of factors, the X and Y sort of theory, you know, back in the day?
Yeah, that's a level almost below that as well. If you're not getting those things right, then, you know, you're going to struggle to do anything else that will give you any meaningful form of creating an engaging.
Yeah, I guess what I meant was that if some, you know, so you're saying that 75% of those kind of companies are potentially addressing engagement, like more like a hygiene factor, yeah. And therefore it's just really kind of at a rudimentary level on any of the sort of missing the target, really.
And that the attitude is almost that engagement is something that you do to people.
Yes.
We are going to engage you as a workforce. That type of attitude. And as you can appreciate, the moment I say it in those terms, people immediately feel, well, I'd like to see you try and engage me. You know, that's our instinctive response to something like a sort of heavyweight engagement program or the feeling that we're being done to, as it were. Whereas the companies that really approach this, I think, in the most sustainable way and the better way are the companies that are simply thinking about how do we embed engagement so that it's simply how we are. This is how we do business. This is what we're like every day. Mm-hmm. It's not something that we do to people for a while in an attempt to elicit a particular response. It is simply how we operate on a day-to-day basis. And that tends to where we see the sustainable, high-performing, highly engaged cultures coming out.
Perfect. I mean, I think that's sort of exactly what we talked about. I mean, when I was at the conference, I was speaking about, I talked about a number of different case studies about companies using what I termed for the benefit of the conference is using kind of keystones. This is foundational thing or this kind of bit that kind of holds everything together. This is your focus. And it's, you know, and some companies use it to give them focus, allows their people to coalesce around, as it were, because it's like it's something. Absolutely. it's the thing that holds it all together.
Absolutely.
And some companies actually measure engagement on the back of that, and some of them don't, because actually to them it's it's not the point.
Absolutely right. And one of the things that people will find if they go and have a look on the engageforsuccess.org website is the 4 enablers of engagement, and these were identified in David and Nita's original work.
Uh-huh.
And have been very much borne out by all of the work and the case studies that we continue to do. And essentially, there are 4 great lenses through which to view your culture and your organisation. And if these things aren't present, in general, you are not going to be achieving sustainable and good levels of engagement within your people in your workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is the ability to have a story of the organization that allows people to connect to it at an emotional level. So they feel purpose, they feel meaning, they feel a sense of their part in the journey and the story of mm-hmm. that organization. So it's not so much a strategy per se, but it certainly has the context of understanding where the organization is going, but also where it's been. That's a very important part of it. Your managers need to be able to manage well. And, you know, culturally in the UK, we still tend to hugely ignore the fact that management is a skill that mostly needs to be learned. We don't do it intrinsically. We have to be taught how to do it well. And engaging managers will generally be able to give you scope and define what your role is, but then leave you to it.
Mm-hmm.
So they will trust you to get on with it. They will treat you as an individual, and they are able to coach and stretch effectively just simply as part of their natural way of being, as opposed to a sort of very scheduled one-to-one every quarter or whatever else.
Right.
So very important that managers are able to manage well. Employee voice is a huge part of engagement. So it's, you know, far wider than communications per se. So you as an employee at anywhere, at any level within that organisation, feel no barrier of trust or fear or anything else to having your say. So you feel that you can talk, you trust that you can talk, and you feel that what you have to say is acknowledged and appreciated, mm-hmm. even if it isn't necessarily actioned. I mean, we don't tend to work in democracies. We can't do everything that somebody suggests. But if you are being consulted and you feel that you have influence over things that are clear to you, then that's hugely powerful within an organisation. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have it, you're very much putting yourself at the risk of reputational damage in many ways, in all sorts of areas these days. And then the final one is organisational integrity, that the behaviours that you see all around you at whatever level, but particularly from leadership and management, are congruent with the values that the organisation espouses. Because again, if you don't have that, if people are acting in a way that is different, I mean, a classic is where organisations say people are our most important asset, but there's a real culture of bullying and harassment and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and you just immediately create distrust there, because the behaviours that you see around you aren't echoing the values that the company is putting out there for everybody to see. So those four points are a really good way of looking at, as you say, keystone sort of behaviours within the organisation that will drive an engaging culture.
That's perfect. I mean, it's really straightforward. It's a bit like, help me understand why I'm here. Treat me well. Listen to my opinion. Don't be a Wally.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what, Adrian? I mean, I quite often stand on a conference platform and I say, this isn't rocket science. We do actually know all this stuff.
Yeah.
And the difficulty is putting it into practice over and over again. And it's such a shame, because none of this is difficult to understand. It's the implementation.
Sure.
Within organisations that becomes more difficult.
So who do you, I mean, through your kind of like work and things, and I was using different sort of stories to highlight different sort of people that are doing different sort of different approaches, as it were. Mm-hmm. But what from your work and have you seen that you think this is a great example of a firm and organisation, mm-hmm. That is putting all these lenses, has found their balance? Because I think that's the point. It's like no balance is the same. It's not the same balance for everybody. People have different sort of mixes, as it were, of these four things.
They do, absolutely. And of course, they use different language around them as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. So we use a particular set of words to describe them. But again, we very often say, just think about what the concept of this is, because the likelihood is that you call it something different within your organisation. Mm-hmm. There's one of our, at the core of Engage for Success is a task force of the companies that, excuse me, originally got together to start it off as a movement, and they tend to be our corporate donors, and they tend to be the people who have the most to do with giving us secondees and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. But one of those organisations is BAE.
Okay.
And they've taken almost lots of stock and barrel, the four enablers and some workshop models that we developed a few years ago. And they use that internally to teach their managers about engagement and to drive the sustainable building of an engaging culture. Mm-hmm. And they've had some great success. And one of the things that they do that I think is sensible for any organisation looking at this to do is decide what it is that you're actually trying to influence. So what are the business metrics that you want to change?
Yes.
And look at it in that way. And again, that takes you out then of this funnel of it being an engagement program or simply trying to influence engagement scores on a survey, and actually it puts you into the better role of what is it that I'm trying to improve about my business. And the research suggests that obviously engagement can influence health and well-being, certainly health and safety, and retention levels, absenteeism, profit, revenue, efficiency, all of these business metrics, customer satisfaction, I mean, the one we were particularly interested in at BT, mm-hmm. All of those things can be impacted affected by increasing levels of engagement. And for me, that's the starting point, is, and the companies that do it well, is they've got a clear idea of what it is that they're trying to improve or what problem that they're trying to address.
It's sort of a bit like kind of joined up thinking, and in many ways it's like people see that as this is like an element in the overall sort of picture, rather than being it's yes. another initiative that sits in a department, whether it's HR or internal comms or something else. And it's a bit like there's no tick box exercise. And it's a case of like, actually, if we do this right, this is what happens.
Yeah. And actually, I think you've put your finger there on one of the big challenges around engagement, Adrian, which is that it's very commonly seen as the responsibility of HR or sometimes comms. Mm-hmm. And in fact, for me, this introduces an artificial barrier in the thinking of it, because the moment that you put somebody in an HR division with the title of head of engagement, whatever it is, everybody else then abandons responsibility. Yeah. Says, oh no, we've got somebody who does engagement. We all have a responsibility for engagement. We have a responsibility for engaging with our peers, with our teams, up and down through hierarchies, and a responsibility almost individually, I think, to come to work prepared to be open to that engaging environment. But it's everybody's responsibility. You know, it's not the responsibility or accountability of the person who has it in their job title.
But I think one thing I would add on that is that it's a two-way thing, is that we want to engage with those feeling people around us. And yep. I feel like, and be better managers and be better sort of like team players and so on and so forth. But at the same time, so we can want to have our organizations be more engaging and how they do things, but we've also got to choose to want to be more engaged.
Yes.
And because it's like it comes to the thing. It's a relationship thing, right? Is that you can lead a horse to water or camel to water, or whatever, but you can't force it to drink. And this is this is kind of one of the kind of problems where you get back, and we go back to almost the beginning of the conversation, where it becomes that there's too many people that are doing engagement in terms of a more of a transactional model, where it's something they're doing to people, and that's kind of hence why the needle just doesn't seem to be moving on some of these numbers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so is that then, because I mean the employee engagement thing, the Engage for Success and the study and everything has been around since was it 2008, 2009? I mean, it's been around, it's been talked as an issue. It's been talked about for. Much, much longer. Was it Gallup has been kind of monitoring this for like the last 15 years or so. And so I guess it's there, but I guess is the big challenge, the next thing on the employee engagement agenda, is it that people need to start seeing it as in a joined up sort of way?
It is. I mean, we're doing a piece of work at the moment, which is sponsored by Oracle. We're doing it with Ashridge Business School. Some really in-depth research into the barriers to engagement. And for me, this is the big understanding that we need to come to is why those numbers really aren't moving. I mean, Gallup suggested recently that they're starting to see perhaps an increase in levels of engagement, but it's pretty tenuous at the moment. And certainly levels tend to remain fairly flat.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think this is the point that we now need to understand, is what's getting in the way. Mm-hmm.
I
think that would be fascinating. So the work we're doing will be headlining in the autumn and published at the end of the year.
Perfect. Well, I mean, do let us know kind of like what you find out with that, because it does seem to be the thing is that there's a lot of people kicking the football around, but not many people knowing how to play football.
Well, and you can have wildly differing levels of engagement within parts of organisations. Mm-hmm. So it's just understanding the factors that are underneath that and what is making the difference between an engaged team and a disengaged team in the same environment. Sure. So I think we should have some really, really interesting stuff from there.
Perfect. So that's all fascinating. Now, I wanted to ask you something while I have you on the line. So I think but I'm going to tell you anyway. So I recently published a new book called How to Wow. And that was towards the beginning of April. And I wanted to, I've started to do is to, every now and again, is try and get other people's take on what does WOW service or WOW experience kind of mean to you from your perspective? So what do you think? What does it mean? What's the headline?
Yeah, for me, it's absolutely the authenticity of the person who's delivering that service to me. So we've had a weekend away this weekend. We've been in camping and helping out at a canal festival in the middle of Leicestershire. And there's a little co-op up the road. Every time we went in that co-op, I mean, half the time we were soaking wet and you know, wanting warm food, whatever, whatever. The young people who were serving were an absolute pleasure. And they would ask us how the festival was going, and they would engage with us at a really sort of personal and genuine level. And it made it an absolute pleasure every single time we went in. And for me, that's the WOW. It's the people who are doing whatever role it is are being genuinely themselves. And it was a delight. It really was.
Fantastic. And so if... that's great. I mean, that's like adds to my list of stories of things that I'm going to kind of gather around this. It's like my own piece of research. What does WOW mean? And we can show that it means something as diverse as engagement is, I guess, in many ways.
Yeah.
But also then if I had to extend that, and if I had to ask you, if I had to ask you to suggest a thing that firms should do one thing better that would help them in their quest to deliver a better WOW service or WOW experience, what would you suggest that would be? So if you say do this, it's an instruction, what would it be?
Trust your people.
Okay.
They know, you know, they know the best way to improve your organization. Mostly people don't come to work to do a rubbish job. They come to do a good job. Trust them to do it.
Perfect.
Let them be themselves.
Full stop, enough said. So, brilliant. So I'm just kind of conscious of time, Cathy. And is there anything else that you'd like to add? I mean, things that we haven't kind of covered off around engagement, issues that you think that are upcoming or challenges and stuff before I ask you my final question that I always ask people.
Well, I think probably, Adrian, we could talk for another half an hour. So I think I'll say, yes, we've covered everything that we need to cover.
Brilliant. So here's my question that I always end these conversations on. And it's and it's this. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
I'd just like to send people to the Engage for Success website, engageforsuccess.org. Come and explore, come and be a part of the movement. We'd love to meet you.
Fantastic. Well, Cathy, I'll make sure I get all that kind of linked up and written up and give you a big shout out, and hope we'll push some, you know, lots of interesting kind of people your way. But I just wanted to say thank you for your time today and sharing your experience, and here's to pushing on with the engagement agenda.
Absolutely. Thank you, Adrian.